Welcome to the Deep Dive, your daily distillation of what's driving the tech conversation, pulled right from the Hacker News front page.
That's right.
It's May 10th, 2025, and this is our 30th Deep Dive. Today, we've got five really interesting discussions lined up.
Yeah, a really great mix today, I think. It kind of shows the breadth of Hacker News. We'll dig into a pretty significant legal move in the U.S. versus Google case.
Okay.
A cool personal tech project someone built for Gmail. Some sharp criticism of a new tech specification.
Ah, interesting.
A philosophical concept that's worth thinking about. And finally, an effort to preserve video game history. So, lots to cover.
Definitely. Let's jump right in with that first one that sounds potentially huge. Y Combinator, you know, the big startup accelerator.
Oh, yeah, everyone knows YC.
They've filed an amicus curiae brief. That's a friend of the court thing, right?
Yeah.
Supporting the government in the U.S. versus Google antitrust case. And YC, I mean, they've seen it all over the last 20 years with startups.
Exactly. And their point, based on all that experience, is pretty blunt. They're saying that strong antitrust action against Google isn't just, like, a theoretical good. It's absolutely necessary for a healthier U.S. innovation scene.
So it's not just lawyers arguing. It's people who build companies saying this matters.
Right. They're saying this has real effects on whether new tech gets built and funded.
They use this term, the VC kill zone. It sounds pretty dramatic. What's the argument there?
Yeah, it is a strong term.
Yeah.
Basically, YC is saying that Google's deals to be the default search engine, you know, on iPhones, Android phones, browsers, have locked up something like half of all search queries in the U.S.
Half? Wow.
Yeah. So if you're a venture capitalist, YC argues, why would you pour money into a new search startup or maybe an AI search competitor when Google already has half the market essentially guaranteed? It creates this kill zone where new ideas just can't get funding or traction.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Hard to compete when the default is already set for so many people. And they connect this to AI now, right?
Absolutely. That's the really crucial part now. They see generative AI as this huge potential disruptor for search. I mean, it could completely change how we find information.
Right.
But, and this is YC's big worry, for new AI players to actually compete, they need two things. Users, obviously, but maybe even more critical, they need access to massive amounts of data to train their models.
And Google has all that data from search.
Exactly. So the fear is that Google will just use its current search dominance to hoard that data, hoard user access, and basically block any serious AI competitors from even getting started. It's like pulling up the ladder after they've climbed it.
Gotcha. So given that fear, what are they actually asking the court to do? What are the remedies YC wants?
They have some specific asks. First, they want what they call open index and data set access.
Mm-hmm.
So compelling Google to license its search index's map of the web and also anonymized data about clicks and user behavior.
Uh-huh.
License it to rivals on fair terms. That would let competitors build their own ranking systems, train their own AIs without starting completely from zero.
That would be a game changer. What else?
They also want the court to stop Google from signing exclusive deals for AI training data. Keep that resource open. And importantly, tackle self-preferencing.
Ah, like when Google search results push Google products?
Precisely. Stop Google from using its search monopoly to unfairly favor its own AI tools or other services over competitors. And finally, they want strong enforcement, making sure Google can't just find loopholes or punish companies that try to compete.
That's a pretty comprehensive list aimed at leveling the playing field. Now, Hacker News being Hacker News, I bet there were some pushback and alternative views in the discussion.
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of debate. Some people worried about the economic consequences, you know, if Google's main moneymaker, ads, takes a big hit. Like, what happens then? Is it like the bank bailouts?
Unintended consequences.
Right. Others argued, look, Google got dominant because they built great products that people chose to use. Even if they weren't technically free, they provided huge value. Is it fair to punish that success?
The classic better product argument versus antitrust.
Exactly. There was also skepticism about whether antitrust even works effectively. People brought up historical examples like the AT&T breakup where the results were kind of mixed, you know.
Right. It's not always a clean win.
And some argue that maybe AI is going to disrupt Google anyway, making this whole antitrust thing sort of late to the party or maybe unnecessary.
Interesting point that the market might fix itself.
Yeah. And, of course, some question YC's own motivations, suggesting they stand to benefit if their portfolio companies have an easier path against Google.
Always good to consider the source's potential interests.
Okay, quite a complex issue there. Let's shift gears to something much more hands-on. Gmail to Squild, This sounds like a personal project someone shared.
It is, yeah. Shared on GitHub by Mark Booker. That's a pretty neat idea, actually. It's a Python script that lets you download all your emails from your Gmail account.
Okay.
And stick them into a local Squalite database right on your own computer.
All right, so why would you want to do that? Put your email in a database? It sounds kind of technical.
Well, the main payoff is analysis. Once your email is in a structured database, you can use SQL, that's the standard database query language, to ask all sorts of questions about your own communication habits that are really hard to answer just using the Gmail interface.
Ah, okay. So you can dig into your own data. Like what? Give me some examples.
Sure. You could easily run a query to see who sends you the most emails overall, or find which emails are taking up the most storage space, maybe big attachments you forgot about.
Useful.
Or list all the unread emails from a specific person or project. The project page even gives an example SQL query to find out which senders account for the largest total volume of email data in megabytes. Stuff you just can't easily see otherwise.
That's actually pretty powerful for understanding your own digital life. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to set up? You mentioned Python and databases.
It does involve a few steps, yeah. You need to grab the code from GitHub, install some Python stuff using pip, set up a project on Google Cloud to get access to the Gmail API, and handle the authentication, the OAuth part.
Okay, so not for absolute beginners, maybe, but doable if you're comfortable with some command line stuff.
Probably, yeah. The instructions seem pretty clear for someone with a bit of technical background. It's not just a one-click install, but definitely manageable for many Hacker News readers, I'd guess.
Gotcha. Any future plans mentioned for it?
Yeah, the creator mentioned wanting to add a feature to detect emails that you've deleted in Gmail and mark them as deleted in the database too, which would make the local copy more accurate over time. It kind of speaks to this broader interest people have in getting more control and insight from their own data, you know.
Totally. Taking back control. Okay, cool project. Now let's move to something that sparked a bit more friction, maybe. A critical look at MCP. First off, what is MCP?
So MCP stands for Model Context Protocol. It looks like a specification probably coming out of Anthropic, one of the big AI labs. The goal seems to be creating a standard way for AI systems to talk to each other.
Like different AIs calling functions on other servers, accessing documents, that sort of
Yeah, exactly. Making it easier for different AI pieces to connect and work together. Use shared tools or data templates. Kind of like an API standard, but specifically for AI interactions.
Okay, sounds potentially useful, but the Hacker News discussion was critical.
Very critical, yeah. The main thrust of the criticism was about the quality of the actual MCP specification document and its documentation. The person who posted the critique basically said it was poorly written and had LLM fingerprints all over it.
Meaning they thought it was written by an AI?
Largely, yes. Mm-hmm. Or at least heavily relying on LLMs in a way that hurt the quality.
And why is that seen as a problem for writing a technical spec? You'd think AIs would be good at that sort of structured writing.
Well, the argument is that writing a really solid technical specification isn't just about putting words together grammatically. It requires deep critical thinking, really sweating the details, identifying all the potential edge cases, refining things iteratively. That requires human expertise and careful thought.
Ah, so the concern is that using an LLM might gloss over those complexities or miss subtle problems. It's not just about grammar.
Exactly. It's about the risk of generating something that looks like a spec, but lacks the underlying rigor, clarity, and completeness that comes from that deep human thinking process. You might end up with something ambiguous or flawed.
Did they give specific examples of the bad writing?
Yeah, their discussion pulled some examples apparently from related documentation for something called the DeepSeek API, which seemed relevant. Things like awkward phrasing does not constrain user's rate limit, instead of something clearer like does not rate limit requests.
Okay.
Or simple grammatical errors like we will try out best instead of our best. And phrases like under high traffic pressure, which, while maybe technically okay, just sounded clunky compared to, say, under high load.
So clarity and just awkwardness, though, I think someone had a different take.
Right. There was one comment saying some phrasing, well, maybe unusual, could be seen as sort of metaphorical or interesting. But that seemed like an outlier view. Most felt it was just poor quality, especially coming from a company focused on language AI.
Yeah, you'd expect better. Were there other complaints about MCP beyond just the writing?
Oh yeah, several. People mentioned that the actual specification seemed hard to find or incomplete on the official website. Others had trouble getting the official JavaScript tools, the SDK, to even work properly and had to reverse engineer things.
Not a good sign.
No. It led to a feeling that maybe MCP is still just an early experiment, not really baked yet.
There were also questions about whether it's even needed, given things like OpenAPI already exist for APIs, and concerns about fragmentation, like, will all the big AI players actually adopt this?
Right. A standard isn't standard if nobody uses it.
Exactly. And the suspicion that the spec itself might have been AI-generated kept coming up. On the flip side, some people noted its stateless design could be good for serverless computing and acknowledged that if it worked and got adopted, the idea of a standard way for AIs to interact like an internet for AIs could be really powerful.
So a lot of skepticism about the execution, but maybe some grudging respect for the potential concept. Okay, let's shift gears completely now to something philosophical. The deathbed fallacy. Sounds intriguing.
It is. It's a concept that got discussed on Hacker News based on an older article from 2018. And the core idea is about a specific type of faulty reasoning.
Okay, what is it?
Basically, it's the fallacy of deciding how valuable or important something really is based on whether you'd want it when you're on your deathbed facing mortality.
Can you give an example? I'm not sure I follow completely.
Sure. Think about, say, owning a really fancy, expensive watch. In your day-to-day life, maybe you don't care about it at all. Doesn't seem valuable to you. But if someone asks, if you only had hours to live, what's one thing you'd wish you'd experienced? Maybe you'd say, wearing that amazing Patek Philippe watch. The fallacy is concluding from that deathbed wish that the watch must be inherently valuable or something you should have prioritized in your actual life.
I see. Your priorities and perspective are so drastically different in that extreme situation that it's not a reliable guide for general value.
Exactly. It's a warning against letting that very specific, extreme, emotional state dictate your judgment about what matters in the broader context of life. Don't overvalue something just because it seems appealing when facing the end.
Makes sense. A useful mental check. Okay, finally, we have something about preserving digital history. Embracer Games Archive is preserving 75,000 video games and needs contributions. Sounds like a massive effort.
It really does. The Embracer Games Archive is this initiative focused on saving and preserving an enormous collection of video games, 75,000 of them. Yeah. And it's not just about collecting boxes. It's about preserving the software, the hardware, the history, a huge chunk of our digital culture, really. The whole evolution of interactive entertainment.
And the Hacker News post was mainly highlighting that they need help.
That's the key takeaway, yeah. They are actively looking for contributions to keep this vital preservation work going. The post didn't detail exactly what kinds of contributions, but you can imagine it ranges from donating actual games or hardware to offering technical skills for archiving, maybe helping with documentation or software emulation.
Right, a call to action for anyone who cares about gaming history to get involved somehow.
Exactly. A really important project trying to prevent parts of our digital past from just disappearing.
Absolutely. Well, that covers quite a range today. We went from huge antitrust arguments potentially reshaping big tech,
right,
all the way to a practical script for your own email, a critique of AI infrastructure, a logical fallacy to watch out for, and now preserving Pac-Man and Pong for posterity.
It really shows the mix you get on Hacker News. Hopefully digging into these gives you, the listener, a quicker way to get up to speed on these conversations and, you know, understand the different facets of what's happening in tech and beyond.
Definitely. And maybe here's a thought to leave you with. As AI continues to evolve and tech giants consolidate power, how do we strike that right balance between encouraging innovation and ensuring there's still room for the next big thing? And alongside that, what's our collective responsibility to make sure the digital creations of today don't just vanish tomorrow? Something to ponder.
Good questions.
That's our time for this deep dive. Thanks for tuning in, and join us again tomorrow for another look at the Hacker News front page.